If you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you're a pet lover. But have you ever thought about taking your love for pets and turning it into a business? If the answer is yes, then this episode is for you. We're going to hear from an entrepreneur who turned her passion for animal rescue into a thriving software business and get the inside scoop on how she made it happen. So stay tuned. You're listening to Starlight Pet Talk, a podcast for pet parents who want the best pet care advice from cat experts, dog trainers, veterinarians, and other top pet professionals who will help you live your very best life with your pets. We also share inspiring rescue and adoption stories from people who've taken their love of pets to the next level by getting involved in animal welfare. My name is Amy Castro, and I'm the founder and president of Starlight Outreach and Rescue and a columnist for Pet Age magazine. I've rescued thousands of animals and helped people just like you find the right pet for their family. My mission is to help pet parents learn all the ways that they can care for, live with, and even have fun with their pets so they can live their very best lives and their pets can too. Welcome to Starlight Pet Talk. I'm your host, Amy Castro. My guest today, Liz Whitaker, was drawn to making a difference for animals in need. From her first rescue dog to starting her very own rescue, her commitment to saving as many animals' lives as possible never waned. In running her own rescue, she realized how incredibly hard it was to manage the day-to-day operations that made a rescue tick. The record keeping, the paperwork, and even just processing adoptions became overwhelming. So what did she do? She picked up the phone and called over 400 rescues across the country and asked them what they needed out of technology to help save more lives. And from those phone calls, a new company was born, Pawlytics. So Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
I've been excited to have you. And I think I mentioned this in our kind of pre-recording conversation. And in your intro, I told folks about, you know, the phone calls that you made to over 400 rescues. And I'm pretty sure we were one of those.
Very much so. Yeah, I vividly remember yours because you guys were so nice to me and so kind. And I remember you guys being so enthusiastic about answering all of my questions. And it was such a helpful part of the process.
Yeah, that's great. And that's kind of the same way I've felt about you is that, you know, you get sales calls all the time, but it didn't feel like a sales call. It really felt like somebody that was truly interested in knowing what we did in rescue and obviously had some knowledge about what we do in rescue, but really caring about making our jobs easier. So I did allude in the introduction that you did have your own rescue, but share with us a little bit more about what gave you the idea to start Pawlytics in the first place.
Yeah, totally. So Pawlytics came out of a series of failed ideas. You know, I think my background of working in animal welfare is a really important piece to the entire story. Ever since I was a little girl, I was absolutely in love with dogs and cats. And when I could first go to the library, I remember checking out a book about animal shelters. And that's where I learned that we were actually euthanizing dogs and cats in animal shelters. You know, as a five-year-old, I always thought, well, that's where they go to get adopted and find forever homes. And I had never considered the other side of what happens when they don't get adopted. And so at that point in time, literally as like a 5 or 6 year old little girl, I remember finding my passion in life was feeling this destiny to help dogs and cats that were homeless and living in shelters or that were in the foster animal care system. And so my entire life really was me working at animal shelters growing up in high school. And then when I decided to come to Nebraska for college, starting my own student organization where we worked with every single animal welfare organization in the state of Nebraska as well. And then from there, I decided to try and start my own animal rescue. And so I got to be essentially my own customer for Pawlytics before I even invented Pawlytics. And I was one running all the paperwork around, you know, making sure everything was up to specs for Department of Agriculture while making sure that I was cleaning, paying attention to the animals, reading through all the adoption applications and making sure that everything was in order for the animals as well. And so I remember at that point in time, I was still working with other animal rescues in the area. And I was also the one doing all the paperwork for them. And I thought there has to be a better way to do this. And so I wanted to gut check myself and make sure that I wasn't the only one in animal rescue facing this issue. And so I started doing my research and that led me to seeing that there were some options available, but they looked a little bit antiquated and out of date. And I thought maybe these solutions are great. And so that is when I picked up the phone and called 400 rescues and shelters across the nation and started just asking questions about what their processes looked like behind the scenes of running the rescue, you know, what their admin processes looked like, if they were using spreadsheets to track the animals and where they felt like they were losing time. And you guys were one of those calls, and you shared so much with me, and that really helped lead me to the full ideation of what Pawlytics became, which is management software for animal rescue and animal shelter. But we really try to focus on the foster-based animal rescues that don't have that brick-and-mortar location that's open to the public. And then we also focus on smaller rural-based animal shelters who don't have that tech team that can help them set up a really large enterprise-level technology.
Yeah, and obviously there's such a wide range of shelters and rescues out there. Like you said, small rural ones, you know, we're kind of physically sort of rural, but we are right outside the fourth largest city in the country, but we're still a pretty small rescue. And we had looked into software before, but it was either antiquated or clunky, or on the other end of the extreme, it had a lot of features that we didn't necessarily need, especially at the size that we were at the time. And it was very cost prohibitive at the time. Is that kind of what you were finding as far as the feedback that you got or from the groups that you spoke to?
Yeah, I think honestly, the most common word I heard in all 400 of those calls was the word antiquated. So immediately, just from drawing from that conclusion, I knew it had to be, Pawlytics had to be user-friendly, easy to use, and I really wanted it to be similar to all the apps that we all use in our day-to-day. You know, something similar to how you log into Facebook and you just have this inherent knowledge of how to use it because the buttons are big. It's clear what action you're taking. It's clear kind of how to get to the next step of the thing that you need. So immediately out of the gate, I knew that it needed to be incredibly easy to use. On top of that, yes, price was something that was coming up a lot, especially with the foster-based organizations. And I think what's interesting is that it's easy as a software company or really a business in the animal welfare space to look at those large animal shelters that are doing the 40,000 animals a year and say, I want to build something for them. But when you actually stop to look at the numbers, you'll find that the industry is dominated by these quote unquote small foster based animal rescues that are actually the ones taking on the hardest cases from the shelters, right? They're taking the medical cases that have heartworm so that they can put them in a home for the 6 month long treatment. They're taking the cats that have FIV or FIP, right? And they're the ones putting in the cost towards their treatment. And so, because I was running a foster-based rescue and because I was surrounded by foster-based rescues, I was just seeing such a large gap in opportunity for these rescues to have technology to empower their work. And so cost, I knew, was something I needed to figure out how to make affordable for any size organization. And so that's when we landed on the $1 for every adoption revenue model, because that way it works with the organization. As you guys have an adoption fee coming in, you know that $1 of that is going towards your technology cost, right? And so we wanted it to be affordable so that even the smallest groups doing the 20 adoptions a year had technology to help aid in their cause.
Yeah, I know that was a huge factor for us because we run relatively lean in the grand scheme of things. I mean, if you look at our year-end tax returns, you know, the money that came in is going to be between $1,000 and $5,000 of the money that went out because we just raise what we need. And so every dollar does count. But the difference between having not only just having software versus what we were doing before, which was paper files in Kelsey's office, and then, you know, not everybody has access to it, to having a software program that I can be sitting at an adoption event and somebody asked me, well, what's the status of so-and-so? Right. I can't keep track of all these animals anymore. I don't even know who so-and-so is, but I can get into Pawlytics and boom, boom, I can tell you whether they've been adopted, whether they're still available. So I know that kind of leads me to my next question. Yeah. Well, and I think that to me is a huge benefit, is the accessibility of the information wherever you need it. But how else have you heard, or what do you feel, obviously, as the creator, are the key benefits to shelters and rescues that are using Pawlytics?
Yeah, I think the key benefit is, one, first and foremost, streamlining your operation. You know, like you said, you're typically working in teams of two or more people because coordinating animals and all the people that are involved in running an animal rescue operation, especially because these are nonprofits, you are going to be working with a lot of people that you need to keep on the same page. And to have these workflows that everybody understands, okay, this is where I go to access this information. This is where I go to put in this information so that the next person down the line of our assembly to get dogs out the door, cats out the door, so that they know what to do. And so definitely streamlining those processes. Two, because we are your database, you know, we're going to do all the heavy lifting of sending data where it needs to go. So most animal rescues, the goal is to get these pets adopted. Unless you're a sanctuary or a TNR exclusive organization, the goal is to get them adopted. And so we'll do all the heavy lifting on the front of getting them listed on Pet Finder and adoptapet.com. So Pawlytics can act as their one source of truth. Once they enter the information there, their pets are going to show up on adoption websites so that they can be found by these potential adopters. Second to that is that even after the pet gets adopted, we continue to follow it through by registering the microchip for the adopter and for the animal rescue. Because when that transition happens, you don't know if the pet's going to not know that they're going home with this new loving family. They might try to run away. They might get scared. You know, there might be an accident that happens. And so it's so incredibly important to have that microchip registered the second that pet gets adopted. And so Pawlytics can do all of that for the rescues without them even having to think. They're just going in, adding these pets, adding the adoptions, and Pawlytics is doing all this extra work behind the scenes on their behalf so that they can really stay focused on the animals and on making sure that they're making these really good matches to families and helping families that are maybe struggling with an adoption as well. You know, I think we all have this fairy tale idea that people go home with their dogs and it's just this beautiful, happily ever after. But as we know, you know, being people that have lots of dogs in our lives, that sometimes it doesn't feel as smooth. Sometimes you have a little bit of that remorse or that regret of, oh my gosh, what have I done? And it's really important that the rescue team and representatives are more available and clear-minded to be able to focus on handling those problems and getting solutions in that way versus dealing with registering microchips and entering a dog in three different websites for adoption and all these things that are really mundane tasks that literally technology can do for you.
I know for us, for sure, it's been a huge time saver with the additional features and benefits, because we used to have a specific volunteer designated to taking all of those pictures and profiles and uploading them to the various, like you said, the three or four different websites you have to put them on. And then other volunteers that were entering other paperwork, other, you know, another volunteer that's doing microchips. And so to have that taken care of has been hugely helpful for us.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Even just having a place where it is all stored in one centralized location. Because we saw when I was doing those 400 phone calls, I saw every which way that people were running rescues or running shelters. And it would be where, you know, the adoption team was using a whole different set of technology than the fostering team, or the dog team was using different apps and tools and processes than the cat team. And so it was really hard in those instances for those groups to be on the same page, understand what animals they had in their care, where those animals were at, what medical had been done or vetting had already been done or what hadn't been done. And like you said, being able to be somewhere, say at the dentist, and having, you know, a potential adopter asking you questions about an animal that maybe you're not as familiar with, because as your rescue grows, there's going to be animals you don't get to meet or be part of their process one for one on or hands on. And so, yeah, like you said, it's a huge time saver. And that really was my angle, because so many people who work in rescue or volunteer in rescue have day jobs, you know, and so they're sacrificing their evening hours and weekends to these animals. And so I really wanted to make a product to kind of honor animal rescuers doing all this work, because I was one of those people as well.
Yeah, and it really is a juggling act. I think people don't sometimes understand that. I always find it interesting when people call us, because we do have a phone number and we do answer the phone. And a lot of rescues don't have a phone number. It's an email address, and it may take several days to hear back from somebody. And people get a little bit aggravated about that. And it's like, you don't realize that probably 90% of those rescuers are working full-time jobs and then trying to do this nights, weekends, on their lunch breaks, things like that. You know, we're all just kind of doing the best we can. And when we can have technology that streamlines that process, so much the better, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had mentioned to me, and I just wanted to make sure to get this in because I thought this was interesting, in our previous conversation that Pawlytics is a benefit corporation. And I had to go look that up because I had never heard of that. What does that mean? And how does that kind of impact your business model?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up. I feel like I do not get to talk about it as often as I would like to. But yeah, so Pawlytics, when we started the business, when I started the business, I knew that it was a mission-oriented business. I knew that the reason that I was starting it was because I knew and I believed that animals had inherent value and that the people that were opting to do this work, often for free, had value in society as well. And I really wanted to create something that always maintained that mission at the forefront. On the other side of things, I wanted to be able to grow it as big and rapidly as possible with the support of people who maybe weren't as interested in the nonprofit side, right? Because we can always leverage the tools around us to further our mission. And so as I went searching and deciding like this was a business that I wanted to pursue and a career that I wanted to pursue out of college, I thought, all right, so what is step one? And that's registering the business. And I looked at all my different options. And when I found benefit corporation or public PBC, public benefit corporation, it was that perfect blend of exactly really what Politics was trying to do, which is you're supposed to prioritize your profits alongside your purpose. And so because I knew I wanted to grow Politics to be as big as it possibly could be, that maybe one day it would even grow beyond me leading it, I wanted to make it hard for anyone who was involved on the business side to remove that mission aspect. And so when it comes to being a public benefit corporation, all investors, business partners, teammates, employees, even customers, we look for people who are aligned in the mission aspect first and foremost. We make decisions exclusively first on if they're going to impact animals or the people who are doing the rescue work or even the animals after they go home to their new adopters to make sure that they are able to maintain a really solid quality of life as well. And so being a public benefit corporation gives us the room to look at the purpose of why we exist first in every decision that we make. And it means that everybody that's involved with Politics, from the customers to the investors, is aligned in that mission as well. And so it's been a wonderful decision moving forward that I made early on, just knowing that that mission was always going to be at the forefront of everything that we do. And so it's a very special kind of classification. And I think we're so fortunate that it's something we get to talk about so much because we find that we are aligned with our customers. We are aligned with our business partners. We are aligned in our investors, that the animals are the priority and the people willing to do the work to save the animals who really never signed up to be the janitors of the animal world are also the priority. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, as somebody who for my paid gig does consulting and training in the corporate and other businesses, but you know, a lot of corporations, a lot of people have missions and values and they like to make signs and put them on the walls. Mm-hmm. But as we've seen, obviously in the news over the years, various cases that have come up, you know, people, it's just something on the wall. It's not something that people are actually living. And so to really make that part of your practices, but make it part of the structure so that will always be part of the practices, I think is something that was very appealing to me, you know, and something that I think people would say, hey, you know, this is the kind of company that I would want to support and be a part of for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, growing up, I always assumed like, oh, I'm going to go be a lawyer and make a bunch of money. And then I'll open up an animal shelter when I'm retired and I'll go run that. And I, you know, I think that narrative really shifted for me as I figured out, wait, I can just start a business that is helping animals, like that is our output. That is our inherent good that we put in the world, is that the product literally allows animal rescues to save more animals than they could prior. If they were using some sort of paper system or some sort of fractured or disjointed system, Politics is literally outputting that more animals are getting saved. And so when we were looking at becoming a benefit corporation, you know, we did have the option to say, hey, let's just donate 1% of our profits. And it's not to say that those options are bad. It's that it wasn't enough for me. You know, 1% is one thing, but what if in every dollar we made, we knew that something on the other end of that was having a better outcome to their life than maybe they would have, you know? And so to us, that dollar per adoption, it's not really just money coming into us. We look at it as like, wow, that's another animal that got to go home that had a live outcome, you know? And that's really impactful when we're looking at our numbers, because we're not just looking at revenue. Revenue is an output of really any business you create. And it really doesn't matter what kind of business. Revenue is always an output. It's a result. For us, we get excited and why my team gets out of bed every day is because we know that every day that we get up and we answer emails, we help people with applications, we help people debug things inside of our own software, that means more animals are going to get saved on the other side of that. And that's really why we do this and why my team gets up every day and does what we do.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine anything more inspiring than to know that you're getting paid in lives saved.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, exactly. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. So we've been talking about software and we've been talking about the impact on rescues. And, you know, I do want to get to any tips you might have for other people who are animal lovers to start a business. But for those people who are not necessarily thinking about starting a business and they're a pet parent, why would a pet parent care that somebody uses a software like Pawlytics? Because I've seen the extremes where, you know, pet parents getting even adopted from a municipal shelter and they get literally no records of anything that's been done to that animal. Yes. It's like, oh yeah, it's had its vaccinations or whatever. Everything's done. It's good to go. But where are the records and how do we have that?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really wonderful question. I think you hit the nail on the head that, again, accidents happen. When we're dealing with live animals, this is not the luxury of, you know, being Foot Locker where you're selling product that sits on a shelf and that you have the time to pause and fill out the paperwork because the thing sitting on the shelf isn't going to go anywhere. It doesn't need to be fed, washed, clean, walked, you know. And so there is this lack of luxury when it comes to working in an animal shelter or even at a foster-based rescue where the thing that is being transferred in ownership is alive, and it is really a health problem, a public health problem, if this pet is not up to date on their vaccines. It can also be a problem for the animal if they're getting over vaccinated, right? Because vaccines are great. It really helps animals stay protected from disease and possible infection. But there is a problem when it comes to over vaccination, right? And that's where we're seeing some animals at their vaccine sites, you know, maybe getting tumors or other issues popping up. And when you're sending a pet parent home with no paperwork and they take it to the vet has to do their duty to the public health part of things and re-inoculate the animal because there is no
guarantee. You're starting all over again.
Exactly. And so not only does that over-vaccinate the animal, it becomes a burden now to the new pet parent when we're already in a time of financial stress across the nation, in that they're paying now for more vaccines for their pet that really should have come to them already vaccinated, vetted, et cetera, and maybe aware of some maybe known health issues. And so it's important to have these checks and balances for the organization so that mistakes don't happen. I mean, even from the perspective of a shelter who transfers animals to rescues so that they can further vet them and get them prepared for their new home. You know, we've seen shelters that were just so overwhelmed and really at no fault of their own, but so overwhelmed that they're handing the wrong stack of paperwork to the rescue. And so now the rescue is like, oh my gosh, I didn't even get the paperwork of all the pets that we pulled when we already know such limited information on them. And so, you know, when you're looking at adopting from somewhere, you're already going to be adopting a little bit of a question mark because that just is animals. They can't tell us their history. And two, we don't always get the luxury of getting to peer into what happened throughout their lifetime. And so every drop of information that you can send home with a new pet parent that's accurate is going to really prepare them to give that new pet in their family the best long-term quality of life. And they're really going to be able to start them out on some good decisions when they go to see their vet, when they go to purchase products, when they go to even begin training, say, a new dog that they've adopted. So yeah, the software aspect is, I think, unbelievably important. And it's not, you know, you're right. It's not something that people are really aware of that they should be looking for.
Yeah. And I know we've seen, you know, in our rescue, we've seen the results of not having those good records, you know, from shelters that, and this is kind of a pet peeve of mine, they'll heartworm test on intake.
Yep.
And granted, the expectation is that the animal's not going to be there very long, sadly. It's either going to go out the door with a rescue or it's going to go, sad to say, out the door in a garbage bag because of the sheer volume of animals. But we've taken in several animals that heartworm tested, they're negative. Well, when you look at when they were tested versus when we picked them up, and then suddenly they're heartworm positive because this is Texas and our animals are basically getting infested with heartworm on a daily basis with, you know, with the mosquitoes that we have. And then another case recently where we took in three puppies from an older lady who had adopted a dog and was told the dog was spayed. Well, the next thing she knows, the dog's had six puppies. And, you know, she was able to find homes for three of them, but not the other three. So we took them in and we're in the process of, as a matter of fact, I've got a meet and greet for two of them this afternoon at two.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You know, and that's a little bit extreme, but I don't think it's really unheard of. I bet you it happens a lot more than I'm aware of.
Yeah, no, I think that's, it's really great examples, heartbreaking examples. And, you know, I think we're also in an era where, especially when it comes to large dogs, we are in a crisis, right? Like it is October of 2023 and we are actually in a crisis when it comes to animal sheltering of large dogs. We're having higher intake of large dogs than ever before. We're having higher euthanasia rates of larger dogs than ever before. It is at no fault of the shelters. This is not to vilify the shelters. It is, like you said, the sheer volume that cannot be kept up with. And I think when we're in this era where we're actually now competing more with actual breeders, I mean, literally, this is the first time in the last 5 years where the keyword search term of adopt a dog is one for one, is equal with buy a dog. That's the first time in 5 years. Adopt a dog has always ranked higher than buy a dog on Google. And for the first time in 5 years, they're the same. And I think if we're going to be competing with breeders, you know, why do people go to breeders? Well, they go to breeders saying, well, I'll get to know the entire history of my pet, right? I'm literally purchasing it out of the womb and I know the parents and I know this and that. And so if we're competing on that level, the more information we can arm adopters with so that they can kind of be, have that same feeling of being satiated with knowing their pet as they bring it home and knowing their history of their animal as they bring it home. That's going to be a competitive advantage when now is more important than ever that we are really getting these dogs out of the shelter as best as we can alive.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. I hadn't even necessarily thought about that, but you're right. I mean, the tide has definitely shifted a bit from being super proud that I've rescued a dog to being super proud that I've purchased a golden doodle, schmoodle, poodle, whatever. Some kind of oodle along the way. And it's definitely been quite a change. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've been impressed by one of the many things, but from Pawlytics is you're constantly innovating, like adding new features, the ability to automatically upload to these various websites where animals get advertised was not there when we originally started. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the more recent ones was your Petcademy partnership. And I think that is going to be a game changer for rescues from the standpoint of providing a level of follow through or support after pet adoptions. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I absolutely love and adore that partnership. You know, again, we're fortunate that we do get to pause with our partners and really kind of comb through what their purpose is and what their mission to the animals are. Again, coming from that standpoint of us being a benefit corporation. And so when we met Petcademy, it really felt like meeting us, our own, right? Of like, this is somebody who really has always been in it for the animals. And the founder of Petcademy also founded Rescue Walk, which some people might be familiar with, but it was an app on your phone that you can download. And as you walk, it'll donate to whatever animal shelter or rescue you wanted to donate to.
Oh, wow.
So this is someone that I knew was in it for the animals from day one. Very, very similar stories. And so from that standpoint, I'm like, okay, I definitely want to see what technology has been invented here. And what we found was that the technology is for rescues to basically have this behavior team extension to their organization, where again, we've talked a lot today about how busy rescuers are in taking care of the animals that are actually in their care and dealing with the people side of things. And so once a pet goes to their adopter or goes to a foster home, now you've got this added responsibility of, well, the adopter and foster is probably going to have questions. Again, we're giving out animals that we don't always know exactly their history. We don't know how they're going to react in certain situations. We don't know if they maybe picked up a bug in transport and now they're going to have some tummy aches and, you know, some poopy results out of that.
Yeah.
And so the adopters and fosters tend to have a lot of questions every time there's a new pet in their house, even if it's a seasoned adopter or foster, because every animal is unique. Every situation is unique. And so Petcademy steps in and acts as the behavior team for any shelter and rescue. They've got behaviorists on their team that help provide answers to the adopters and fosters for the rescues. The rescues do get to read the messages beforehand, and they get to approve it to make sure that it's in line with the way that they believe that they want to train animals in their care. And what they've seen is that the return rates for the groups that are using Petcademy have just substantially dropped. I mean, some of them have dropped in half in terms of pets being returned because of these issues that adopters and fosters felt that they weren't, you know, qualified or really well equipped to handle. And again, when we're in this crisis, especially when it comes to large dogs, now is more important than ever to throw every resource at the adopters to ensure that they're keeping the pet so it doesn't end up back at the shelter where, again, we're so inundated and the numbers are so high we can barely keep up with them.
Yeah, and that's such a huge point. I mean, and one of the things that we pride ourselves in our rescue is having a lifetime return. Yeah. Most organizations, you know, some organizations have that. Some, it might be 30 days, whatever it might be, or it might not be at all, because even if I wanted to take it back, I don't have the space. And I also think, you know, between that challenge and then also the challenge of adopters almost panicking or not really giving things time. It's like, you know, 24 hours they're wanting to I mean, we've literally had things returned in 24 hours, and it's like, this cat's not moving enough. It's like, well, we told you she was laid back and doesn't do a whole lot, and you kind of saw that when you came to visit, but they start freaking out, and you know, sometimes you can talk them out of it and sometimes you can't. It is labor intensive having those phone conversations and those follow-ups. And so, again, another thing that Pawlytics has, you know, again, created a partnership with Petcademy to take that burden off of our plate, but still be there. And because I think that support and that follow-through is so important for adopters, like you said. I mean, it just, the education is what keeps pets in homes. And that's why we're doing this podcast, is, you know, to keep pets in homes for sure.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's in line with our thinking about it. And an added bonus out of it is that, you know, when a pet gets returned to an animal rescue, and my rescue, we feel this way as well. It's hard to not feel like it was a failure. It's hard to not feel bad for the animal. You know, even if the animal's like, oh, I went on a fun vacation for 24 hours, you know, that really might be their perspective. But so in a almost inadvertent or accidental way, by preventing more returns, we're actually also helping the animal rescuers' mental health. You know, I mean, this is a really tough industry to volunteer your time to, and to come out of it not feeling awful some days is really difficult. And to sometimes feel like, oh, I messed up in that placement, and how did I not see that before I sent that animal home there? You know, and some, it really is not our faults, right? We're all doing the best we can, like we said earlier. And so every extra resource and every extra helping hand we can have towards helping new pet parents keep their pets is going to help the animal rescuers as well, so that they don't want to throw their hands up in the air and just quit, because truly animal rescuers like are the heroes right now, just trying to keep animals alive.
Yeah. And some of us think about quitting every day.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, my Facebook is full of that. I mean, I'll scroll every day and I see some new animal rescuer saying, I got to quit for at least a year. I have to stop because my mental health is just dwindling.
It can definitely be a lot. So what are some of the new features? I noticed on your website there were a couple of new things that were coming soon, and I know you're constantly innovating. Anything you want to share with us so we can get excited about it?
Yeah, so we've been really excited about it's not so much a feature, but a new service that we have been hosting for people, which is actually website development and hosting. And that has been so fun to help animal rescuers really build out their brand online more. And actually, you know, prior to me starting Pawlytics, I was an SEO consultant. And so it's been really fun to kind of lean back into what I was doing prior to Pawlytics, or at least what allowed me to get here. So that's helping animal rescues build their websites. We really try to act more as their full IT team now as well. And it's been really nice for rescues because it is our full-time day job. You know, a lot of rescues are lucky in that they'll find a tech volunteer who says, I'll make your website, I'll set up your emailing service, I'll do this and that. But, you know, volunteers get tired and have their own lives that inevitably take over. And so it's been a wonderful service to extend to rescues. So again, they can kind of take that deep breath and feel, okay, Pawlytics has this. I don't have to stress about harassing a volunteer and burning that bridge or anything along those lines. We have also been working on adding pet listings to the websites. And so animal rescues will be able to showcase their own adoptable pets directly from their Pawlytics database right onto their website. So again, another place where they're not going to have to manually enter more pets. And then we were able recently to upgrade a lot of our donation features. And so now rescues can have more donation features within Pawlytics where they can see what animals are people donating for, what causes or what campaigns really push that needle. And so, yeah, we've been really, really gung-ho about upgrading a ton of different features and adding some new services as well where we saw gaps in the industry. Anything that we can take over where there were volunteers in place of doing it or anywhere we can streamline those volunteer hours. Again, the goal is for rescues to be able to maximize their human capital, right? And so any place we can kind of take off their plate in the technology realm, that's where we, you know, have chosen to sit in this ecosystem of saving animals is really what we're going to be doing. And so, yeah, it's been so fun and so wonderful to get to add new services and upgrade some of these features and to watch the results of it as more rescues are able to lean in and use more of those services and to watch them, you know, come back to us a week after starting to use one of our new services and saying like, wow, we've just saved so much time or wow, we've raised more money because of this donation widget on our website.
Yeah, the time saving is huge. I know we're constantly struggling and juggling when it comes to time.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, Pawlytics was invented back in 2019, the initial version. And when I was first building it before, I was not a tech person at all. I was very late adopter to tech. And so when I was deciding that I was going to start a tech company, I was like, okay, how am I going to show an engineer or developer what I want? And so I sat down on my kitchen floor and had this huge stack of just white printer paper. And I drew up all the screens on printer paper and would go around and show it to animal rescues. And they would, I would make them pretend to like click on the screen with their finger and I'd flip to the next page and be like, okay, and then it does this. Is this what you would want it to do? And it's just been so funny because engineering something is hard. Building something is hard. It always takes infinitely longer than you think it's going to take. You know, in year one, you think, oh, I'm going to blow up and we'll be global by year two, you know. And so it's just funny to watch as the things that I invented in my mind or drew on a piece of paper 4 or 5 years ago is still in the process of coming to fruition. And so it's been a fun, sometimes agonizing process, you know, to watch. But every time we release a new feature, it's like the 4-year-old version of me is like getting really excited every time just to see how it's going to be worked in the world. And to think that even people across the globe are using and benefiting something that came from inside my brain is wild. It's wildly exciting for me.
Yeah, it's gotta be. It's gotta be for sure. So on that note, kind of the last thing that I wanted to hit on here, if we've got pet lovers, pet parents that are out there listening and they're thinking, gosh, you know, I wish I could do that. I wish I could take my love for animals and turn it into some type of business. What would you tell them if they were sitting here talking with you right now?
So I think I am no different than anybody else. I am exactly one of the pet parents who listens to this podcast in way that my origin story of all of this, you know, aside from being obsessed as a child, was really due to one animal. It was a dog I had adopted when I was in 8th grade. He was only with me for 2.5 years. His name was Rex. And that was my heart dog. You know, I just loved and adored and endeared this dog so much. And when he passed away, that's actually what kind of drove me to look at, wow, you know, there's probably more Rexes out there in shelters. And how can I help other people find their Rex? And so when you are loving your animal and finding out that you're solving problems for your particular pet, you know, and it's something that you're feeling very passionate about or makes you feel fulfilled even, it's great to kind of step back and look around and start asking of the people around you or making those 400 phone calls of who else is having this problem? Who else loves their animal and wants to solve this problem for their animal to make their lives of more quality, happier, healthier, whatever that looks like? And I think why I was able to pursue this is I was able to kind of break the cultural construct in my head that doing good and making money had to be exclusive or separate, right? Once I started to understand and really believe in my soul that no, you can do both. You can make money. You can build a giant company that's exclusive purpose is to do good in the world. Once I really had my sureness in that fact, I was able to pursue Pawlytics and I was able to better gut feel for advice from mentors or investors or other people or business partners. And I was better to you know, decide what paths I wanted to go down and what risks I wanted to take, always with keeping the animals and my mission in mind. And so to anyone that's listening, that's like, you know, I was able to do this for my pet, and maybe there's other owners out there that are facing similar issues. It's one, to start asking questions of your community. Is this something that other people are facing? And two, to allow your passion and that feeling of fulfilledness to carry you through, and to really own and believe that you can make money and do good in the world, and those can be the same thing.
Yeah, I think you made some great points there. I tend to be a predictor of business failure. I know this is terrible to say, but I've seen, and it used to be sort of a joke when we'd be driving along and you'd see a business that pops up, a little store or something like that, and you say to yourself, yeah, I give that 3 months.
Yeah.
And it's because the piece that's missing, I mean, the passion is so important, and you know, in any business, but the need has to be there as well. And I think that's like, if nobody hears any other advice, your advice to reach out to other pet parents, do they have the same problem? Everybody's looking for problems to be solved. And if you can solve my problem, I'll pay for that. But you've got to make sure that what you have to offer is a problem that has enough people that have the same problem, that are willing to pay for it, that are, mm-hmm. that are going to support a business. And if you do, you know, you're going to be successful, and the passion is what will carry you through. But it's that balance. I think that's so, so important. I'm so glad that you said that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the hardest thing I faced along the way, because Pawlytics was the fourth business I had attempted to start, you know, and this is the one I'm still fortunately able to pursue today, but it was a lot of failures. And what I learned by the time I started Pawlytics, I didn't even actually name Pawlytics for the first 12 months. As I was putting together my business plan, as I was doing those 400 phone calls, I just kept referring to it as the rescue software, because I was so tired of breaking my own heart when the business wouldn't work out, you know, and I became so obsessed with the brand and the potential of where these things could go, that finally, by the time I hit Pawlytics, I was mature enough to understand that I was actually more invested in the problem than I was the solution, right? And what that means is that I really didn't care what the solution was. Like I said, I never was a tech person prior to starting Pawlytics. And so the fact that I'm running a technology business is quite surprising to me, honestly. But it was that I was so obsessed with, I'm going to solve this problem, and I really don't care how I solve it. And so that's what landed me on technology, because it started as an animal rescue, and then it transformed into trying to open up a cat cafe. And then that transformed into my last tech company, which transformed into Pawlytics. And so once I was able to kind of surrender to whatever the solution may be, which, you know, the market will really decide for you, mm-hmm. I was able to see that, yeah, I'm going to find a way to solve this problem, and I do not care how it gets solved, as long as it is helpful to people and animals.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, wow, Liz, thank you so much for all of your, number one, fabulous advice and insight into not only starting and running a pet business, but I think that the key to the whole thing is that desire to have an impact and to, you know, to help animals. That just kind of carries through in this whole conversation. So I really appreciate you being here with me today and with all of us, and sharing your journey and information. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Amy, for having me today. Thank you for the wonderful questions. I love getting to share my story. I love getting to talk about Pawlytics being a benefit corp. And I love, you know, speaking about shelters and rescues. And like you said, educating the public, because we are all in this together for the animals.
That's right. That's right. And so for all of you that are out there listening, I know that we do have shelter and rescue folks that are listening. Make sure you check out Pawlytics. I know we use it. If you want to call us at Starlight Outreach and Rescue, I'll get Kelsey on the phone. She's the cheerleader for Pawlytics. She knows all the ins and outs and will tell you about how awesome it is. And for you pet parents that are listening, again, if you've got a dream, match that dream with a problem that other people need to solve. And, you know, you too can start a pet business. And if nothing else, when you go to adopt, make sure that the organization that you're adopting from has those good records and good record keeping practices, whatever those might be, so that you are getting all of that helpful information to do right by your pet moving forward. So thank you all so much for listening today to another episode of Starlight Pet Talk. Thanks for listening to Starlight Pet Talk. Be sure to visit our website at www.starlightpettalk.com for more resources, and be sure to follow this podcast on your favorite podcast app so you'll never miss a show. If you enjoyed and found value in today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating on Apple. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would be great too. Don't forget to tune in next week and every week for a brand new episode of Starlight Pet Talk. And if you don't do anything else this week, give your pets a big hug from us.